out save, and they will go to Atlanta, preventing the Phillies from winning the National League East.
Hey, we just finished beating the Phillies 3 out of 4. Got the Mets fans here, guys. They just witnessed it. They were part of this energy. It was unbelievable. I have no words for this. I mean, this is what you play for, and this is what you're a fan for, to come to games like this, enjoy the playoff atmosphere. This is unbelievable. We want to come back to you guys. We want to see this place packed again. Let's go, Mets.
Especially after he had just given you 4 outs, what made you confident in going to Diaz for 6 there?
When I made the decision to go to him in the 8th, I wanted my best guy against their best hitter there. And then, you know, let it play out. And then once he got through that 8th with 11 pitches, that's when I was like, probably going to send him back out. So check with him. He's like, I'm good. I said, okay, this is your game. And then I'll be right behind him, you know, pumping him up. But I knew I was going to keep him short. I had Stanek there. And then he got Castellano on a quick out. And then once he got to 2, the walk, I wanted to go out there and check with him and just explain the situation, what I wanted to do there. Hell of a job. You know, we've been protecting him the whole year. And now he's big boy time, you know, and he's our guy.
Carlos, two things. Do you have a rotation for the Atlanta series that you can tell us?
Yeah, we're going to go Sevy, Peterson, Manaea.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, September the 23rd, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNOG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NOG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And don't forget the newsletter. Sign up now, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to welcome in the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Good morning, everybody, to this off-day edition of the Talking Mets podcast. I come to you, 8 or so hours after the Mets defeated the Phillies 2-1. A great Sunday night baseball victory. Mets take 3 of 4 from the Phillies. 6 out of 7 on the homestand. Head into the final week of the season, final road trip, final week. 2 games up with 6 to play on the final wild card spot. Tie with Arizona. So the Mets have a great opportunity here in front of them. A lot to talk about. Not going to get old Game of Thrones on you, but there's some, I guess, some demons that the Mets have to slay this week. That'll be a great theme of the first part of the show. And then in the back half, earlier in the week, there was some criticism of the Mets crowds. The Mets were awesome. The Mets fans were awesome this weekend. And I'd like to talk a little bit about it. Particularly last night, I'm seeing some great videos post-game in the parking lot. So we'll get into the fans and attendance, a theme that's been part of the show in the past. And then on the way out, big announcement, some fun stuff I'm going to be doing with our friend Anthony Rivera of Subway to Shea during the Braves series on Twitter. So if you don't have X, so you're not on Twitter. And I can understand sometimes it gets to be a bit much, that space. But if you do have an account, it might be fun for you after each Mets-Braves game this week to log on. And we'll have some fun stuff for you. So there we go, and away we go. So yeah, come to you. The sun's not even up. Coming to you very early Monday morning. Had a chance to watch the game. And, you know, I'd like to be able to really, like I always say, I don't like doing shows right after. You like to marinate on the show. You like to, think a little bit about what you're doing. Quite honestly, I was exhausted after last night's game. So part of that was like, I need a good night's sleep, at least get, 5-6 hours of sleep before I come to you. Great weekend. And I'll go back to about a week ago when what was in front of the Mets seemed a little daunting. Yes, they were playing the Nats, which was your typical stub your toe series. But you had the Phillies coming in, Phillies trying to clinch a division. They're a tough team. They play the Mets tough. They sometimes get a good contingent of fans coming up the turnpike to Citi Field. So you always worry about losing a little bit of that home field advantage. Obviously, the team getting up for the Mets and everything like that. But the Mets had their final homestand of the year. And you knew without Lindor and the things that were in front of them, no Lindor, tough home schedule, like I said, that they were going to need guys to step up. You didn't have McNeil anymore, their MVP, maybe the MVP of the league, who, by the way, probably lost the MVP this week by being injured, which is a shame. With Ohtani going 50-50, I can't see Lindor winning the MVP. That's a side note. But the things a week ago that I challenge the team on, Alonso stepping up, happened this week. Nimmo stepping up, big time happened this week, especially in the Phillies series. Alvarez, Francisco Alvarez, rediscovering his stroke, rediscovering his power, stepping up and playing big for the Mets throughout the homestand. And then it's like Greg Jeffries reincarnated. Anybody who watched the 88 Mets knows the kind of energy that Jeffries brought when he was called up late in August in 1988 as the Mets were storming towards the division title. Luis Angel Acuña doing a little bit of the same thing and subbing in for an MVP. Jeffries was just coming in trying to give them a spark. Acuña's coming in. Yeah, he's got the last name, but he hasn't had a great year at AAA. And he's out there subbing in for an MVP. And you miss Lindor, but it was really mitigated a little bit throughout the homestand. And then most importantly, and this is a theme that we've had throughout the season, and I can't stress it enough, and I believe throughout the tenure of the rest of his Mets tenure, I think it's going to be the case. As long as he's elite and he's in this class, and obviously the salary is going to dictate that, but Edwin Diaz not only looking like 2022 Edwin Diaz, but then channeling a little Mariano Rivera and getting a two-inning save, a six-out save. If you remember, during the 90s, during the Joe Torre years, and in a lot of ways, Mendoza's probably along with David Stearns doing something similar, they would baby Rivera a little bit throughout the year. And maybe not as much as Diaz, and Diaz was a whole separate situation, but the Yankees would never go really for multi-inning saves for Rivera until late in the year and then all the time in the postseason. And I don't know if Diaz can do this like Rivera would do it night in and night out in the postseason. I have my doubts he could do that. But last night was a night. McGill didn't give you length, although I will tell you, and if you're a subscriber to Beyond the Mic, you know that I talked a little bit about McGill on a reaction video earlier in the week. Similar to his start against Boston, he didn't give you the length of the dominance that maybe you saw against some of the second division clubs, but he did just enough. I mean, that game could have got ugly early. It could have been a crooked number for the Phils in the first inning, three or four runs, but he gets the big out. He survives. I still think with his repertoire, with the life he had on his fastball, and I know maybe some of that had to do with the fact that you had the microphone behind home plate, but it looked like he had a really good life, that he might be a very good piece out of the bullpen, not only for the playoffs, but going into next season. Story for another day, discussion for another day. So everything you ask this club to do, including over the last 45 home games, the last half of their home schedule, they went 33-12. They were dominant at Citi Field. And the crowd is into it. The energy is good. They look excited to play at Citi Field. I know some of the numbers of some of the players, we talked about this at times, aren't as good at Citi Field as they were on the road. I mean, you saw it again last night. It's always, whether it's the early spring or late in the season, when it hits fall, and we are now in fall, it's hard to get the ball out of that ballpark. I mean, I thought for sure Schwarber's ball was out. I thought earlier in the game, Nimmo had hit one out earlier in the game. And I thought Jesse Winker had hit one out earlier in the game. And balls just died out there. And good for the Mets. You know, again, they wound up winning. And even Nimmo's home run in the sixth, I mean, that was a shot. That barely made it out. So goes to show you the Citi Field factor with the weather is in play. But now the real thing is we're all excited. We have a day off to enjoy this, and certainly take the day off to enjoy this, because now it gets real. You got six more days of this, and then the wild card. I mean, it's not going to get any easier. Let's remember that. And the final get it done of the get it done phase is here. And I've been thinking a lot about this, and I actually had a conversation with our good friend. I do collaborations with him on his show, Anthony Rivera's Subway to Shea. Offline, had a conversation a couple of weeks ago in preparation of maybe the scenario that the Mets are in, them being in that situation. And I was thinking about Mets history, and I was thinking about times that they've been in situations where, and the postseason's a bit of a crapshoot, so I'm going to leave that to the side, because there's always going to be postseason disappointments. Every club has them. The Yankees have them. But during the regular season, historically, the Mets don't get the job done when they're faced with this kind of situation. Sure, they, late season 1969, they beat the Cubs, they zoom past the Cubs and win the division. And they had some big wins down the stretch in a very mediocre National League East in 1973. But even 86, where they dominated, and then they played big, played to the big moments in the postseason. They came off back-to-back years, and what fueled 86 was the late season disappointments of 1984, 1985. And then if you go post-86, and a lot of what I believe, what we've talked about on the show, which started this anvil on their back, this yoke of expectations that has repeatedly beaten the fan base down, it fueled the media negativity, is the Terry Pendleton home run in 1987. A lot of what where we're at now plays into that. 89, big losses down the stretch. 1990, who can forget the Benitez blown saves post-9/11 in 2001? Everybody, for the most part, listening to the show probably remembers 07 and 08 and the awful collapse that 07 brought about. Now, yeah, maybe they took a little pit stop with the way they played down the stretch in 2015, beating the Nats. Maybe you could say that. But even in 2019, 2022, with the way they got swept and lost the division to Atlanta, and then falling apart in 2021. So there is, almost 40 years here of history of the Mets disappointing the fan base. And Atlanta, which is, Truist Park now? I can't keep up with any of what these parks are called. Turner Field, whatever. Turner 1, whatever they call them. Has been a house of horrors for the Mets since 1997, really. 1998. We're talking almost 30 years that this team, the Braves, since they became the Braves, because they weren't the Braves until 1991. And they were in the National League West, so it wasn't really until 1995 when they moved to the East. Well, they moved the year before, but that was the strike, that they became the Braves that basically have terrorized the Mets. And, the Mets are in a pretty good position. Three-game series, two games up. They have a chance to maybe stub their toe once, even twice. You don't want to see that. But when I was talking to our friend Anthony Rivera on the phone, we were, I was saying, really would love for the Braves to fall back, for those games not to mean as much. It's very stressful. And he said something that really stuck with me. And it should have been something I thought about. Shame on me. But here's a guy that has made a fan behavior and negativity a big part of the show since its inception. Has talked about this anvil and this yoke, this mysterious mythology that sometimes people get annoyed about and debate. And he said to me, they have to go through this. They have to slay this demon. I don't know if he said demon, but they have to go through this and they have to get this done. This is the only way they move forward as an organization. And he's 110% right, because the disappointment that the Mets have put out there, that was blamed on the Wilpons basically since 2002 when they took over full ownership and really amplified post-Madoff. Really amplified. And that narrative was taken away when Steve Cohen took over the club. And everybody here thought, and I remember saying this day one, I was a first guesser on this, money's going to make life easier. Money's going to make this easier to get excited about this team and potentially put resources in place to be an annual contender. And maybe there was that honeymoon period, which is long gone, I'll tell you that. But there's no yellow brick road to success. There's no easy street, easy pass lane. There's none of that, because success and winning is hard. It has peaks and valleys. I mean, listen to the song, "We Are the Champions" from Queens, "No Bed of Roses, No Pleasure Cruise." I mean, you didn't just make that up. You know, anything you do, any success, whether it be in entertainment or sports or in your life, has those ups and downs. I mean, if you don't have it and it was easy from day one, God bless you, because you're lucky. And I think that this is a defining point for this team. And I wrote about it over at Beyond the Mic, paid content back late last week on Friday. But I wanted to expand upon it here on this program for everybody. And what this team and this group goes down in Mets history as being, I don't know. This week will determine a lot. I don't think they have to win a championship to be a special group in team history, because to me, they finally have evolved with Stearns at the helm into now morphing into the Cohen version of the Mets. Cohen, for the first 3 years of his ownership, was trying to patch this thing together. Building front offices, trying to figure out what type of front office, trying to win while he figures out how to put a team building philosophy in place, building the business side. I mean, he is no longer going to be doing day trading, it was announced this past week, to focus on the Mets. And I don't think it's because he wants to get involved in every single move that's being made on the field. I think it's also the business side. It's what's being built across the street in the chop shop area. But that's a big deal. That's how invested he is in here. Hopefully it won't hurt his personal wealth to the point where he can't fund the team, but that's another story for another day we'll worry about. But this team could be the bellwether, the first example of a new era in Mets history. This is what I always call about, if you read The Winner Within from Pat Riley, There I go again, is the innocent climb. It truly is the innocent climb. And who would have thought that back on Memorial Day after Jorge Lopez meltdown and the team being 11 games under 500? I mean, I don't know if we would have thought about that even as recently as the 4th of July. We were trying to figure out, what is this really going to be? What is this team going to be? And the negative energy that envelopes most versions of Mets teams since the championship in 86 has not yet swallowed or enveloped this club. It tried. They said blanket after Memorial Day. They didn't collapse when Senga went down. They embraced the challenge of no McNeil and Lindor. Those are things that easily could have spiraled the team in the past. And they survived. I mean, going back to Diaz and how important he is to this club, he's blown about 2 years worth of games that an elite closer should blow in the span of 3.5 months since May. Take a swing at Pick'em this baseball season on Underdog. Over 1 million fans across 33 states got in the game last year by making picks on Underdog. Win up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on your favorite player's stats like strikeouts, total bases, and home runs. I picked the higher on 5.5 strikeouts for Tyler McGill last night and won. Underdog is super easy to play, like I just said, and it's even easier to get started. Go to their easy-to-use mobile app or to underdogfantasy.com. Sign up with promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G. There is a G on this one. An Underdog will give you a mystery special pick to use on your first Pick'em entry, plus a first-time deposit offer of up to $1,000 in bonus cash. That's Underdog Fantasy promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, to claim your new customer special of a mystery player pick and your deposit offer. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, 19 and older in Alabama and New England, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Void in Colorado. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP, 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. Enjoy Underdog Fantasy. Tell them Mike Silva sent you. But now it's about finishing the deal. OMG and Grimace is always going to be special. If they stopped and didn't win, I'm knocking on a lot of wood right here, guys. I have an oak wood desk here, okay? So I'm knocking on it. If they don't win another game the rest of the year, the season isn't a failure. It's still been fun. But it will reiterate the negativity and the narrative that the Mets are somewhat cursed. They can't get at, they They can't win in a big spot. Atlanta, I mean, this is even more important. Here's Atlanta ready to, with a big series, take over a wild card spot without Spencer Strider, without Austin Riley, not having Albies for a big part of the year. No Ronald Acuña Jr. again. Now, they won a title without him a couple of years ago, but still. They've had a number of injuries, including losing one of their key starters, Ronaldo Lopez, for probably the rest of the season. And here they are, that they take two out of three for the Mets. They're within a stone's throw of the playoffs. They sweep the Mets. They're in the playoffs, God forbid. And look, the Mets are going to have to earn it. I know that, you know, you look at Jorge Soler and Gio Urshela and Laureate, you know, and say, oh, look, those are component players that are not. Those are the kind of guys that historically have. Gio Urshela is the kind of player who actually I thought the Mets should have signed when they were looking for third baseman on the year. He's the kind of pesky player that go out and have a big series against the Mets historically in Atlanta and look every bit Austin Riley. You know that. So, you know, the yoke will continue to be a thing. The media will continue to LOL the Mets. This is what the media wants. You know, notice that there's been some grouchiness in the media on social media and opposing teams' fans, because the Mets fans are having fun and the Mets are having fun. You know, I see everybody do songs and dances when they hit home runs. And I hate Alvarez's style to run the bases on Thursday. I hate it. There's nothing about any of this stuff. Even the OMG sign, the picture, I know it's part of the game. I hate all that stuff. I don't mind getting excited and pumping fists and high-fiving. It drives me nuts. But maybe I'm being an old fart, just like the fans of the other team didn't like Gary Carter doing a curtain call. I mean, think about it, how 86 the Mets were considered hot dogs because they did curtain calls and they pumped their fist. Imagine if someone came from the future down to 86 today and said, do you realize that that's benign by what will happen going forward? So, you know, the Mets need to finish the deal to make this count. Because if they don't this week, if this club falls flat on their face, even if Lindor doesn't take an at-bat, and I got to be honest with you, I don't like what I hear. I don't think he's injured, like, seriously for his career. I don't know if I believe there's no structural damage. I find it hard to believe. I mean, what is it, a back strain? Sounds like it's something that he's been playing with, and maybe he just aggravated. Maybe it's a soft muscle thing. But even if they have that excuse, I'm sorry. I don't think that they're going to get a pass. They're at 87 wins. I thought they were maxed out at 85-win team. I thought 85 wins at one point was going to get them a spot in one of those wild card spots. Foolish me. Arizona played at a higher level. San Diego played at a higher level. The Braves never faded away and actually improved after they had a bit of a slumber. The Mets have had to play at a very, I mean, the Mets have played at a 650 pace for over 100 games, and they're not even guaranteed a playoff spot. Think about that. That's how tough the National League has been. And the National League will continue to be tough. I mean, you go into next year, the Braves will be healthy again. The Phillies are not going to be any worse. You have the Mets. Milwaukee's well run. You got young teams like Pittsburgh and maybe Cincinnati getting better. The Dodgers are the Dodgers. San Diego seems to find ways to win. Arizona's got some good pieces. You know, the Cubs are always a threat. They have some money. It's not going to be easy, though. The Giants always seem to be a team that finds a way to spend some money and get themselves in the equation. So this is not easy. What the Mets are doing is not easy. So if they're going to break this spell, they're going to slay this demon, they're going to have to earn it. And I think our friend Anthony Rivera is right. They have to go through this. There's no shortcut. You know what would be easy? The Braves losing again yesterday, Mets being three games up, and really having a cushion. That would have made this easier. And truthfully, part of you in the back of your head figured, you know, the Mets are going to have a hard time here on Sunday, and they're going to go into Atlanta only up a game. And even going into the weekend, knowing that they would not have probably Lindor, it didn't look good, and how the Phillies would try to clinch a division, and you have some tough pitchers that they were going to face, including Wheeler, you were like, hey, even if they get to be tied going into the Atlanta series, you know, that then you got to go mano a mano. And remember, and I wrote about this over Beyond the Mic, there was part of you back on Thursday when the Phillies cut that lead to 9-6 after the Bryce Harper double that was starting to have harbingers of a collapse. I mean, this is all in the DNA of the Mets fan. And it didn't happen. and Diaz didn't come in. And I know everybody's going to say, well, it's third base. It's third base. The ball hits third base and then go down the line. Alvarez probably shouldn't have thrown the ball. And look, you want to say that there's some magic there with third base and how the ball was hit. That's fine. But I prefer to look at yesterday about, because, you know, Diaz walked the batter. That throw would have went on his record with a run, but that wasn't his fault. I prefer to look at the fact that the Mets didn't get length out of their starter, and their bullpen was able to get, from the fifth inning on, the outs they needed, and did it almost perfectly. I mean, they got 15 outs, six from Diaz. That's not easy to do against anybody. Give them a ton of credit. I don't want to diminish the credit because of a fluky ball that hits the base. How many times has something like that happened to the Mets? I mean, come on. And Vientos didn't even see it, and, you know, he kind of had to, like, find it and stuff like that. It was crazy how the whole thing came into play. So, and like I said, enjoy the day off. Recharge the batteries. And get ready, because the Mets have to slay their demon. And it doesn't just end in Atlanta. Let's say the Mets go out and take 2 out of 3 Atlanta. Okay, they make the postseason at that point. I think they have to finish strong. I think they have to go to Milwaukee and finish strong to put on a good showing in the playoffs. I mean, once they make the playoffs, I mean, that's a tournament. That's gravy. Going forward, the way the postseason's set up, I don't care if you're the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Mets. You got to get hot in that tournament. You got to have fortuitous things happen. I mean, the bounce of the ball. I mean, it truly, baseball has created parity. I think what the Yankees accomplished in the 90s, even with what Toronto did with a back-to-back and what Oakland did in the 70s, very difficult. Look, you could have teams like the Yankees make the playoffs for, you know, 40 years. Dodgers have made it every year for the last, what, 15 years? But winning the whole enchilada, winning it once, hard. Winning it multiple times, back-to-back, almost impossible. 3 in a row, 4 out of 5, like the Yankees did. Whew. Good luck on that. Good luck on that. So we'll see what the week brings. It's a week of history. I think what you're seeing going forward this week, you're living through Mets history. A time where 10, 15, 20 years from now, when it's a new era of Mets baseball and so many more things have happened, you'll turn to your kids, your grandkids, whatever, your partner, your friend, and say, you know, they finally slayed that feeling of doom in 2024 with the OMG Grimace Mets. Let's make OMG and Grimace stick. Let's make it special. Let's make this innocent climb count. It's going to be innocent climb no matter what. And innocent climbs have disappointment. But this innocent climb, if this disappointment, it'll be the heartbreak of not maybe winning it all. They cannot afford now, where they are today, 2 games up with a week of baseball left. With 6 games left, with a shot to win 90 games. Who would have thunk that? We didn't think that in spring training, and we certainly could. I mean, people would have laughed at you on Memorial Day. 90 wins. And 90 wins should do it. I think if they win 3 games this week, and that means only one against the Braves, really, it should do it. But I wouldn't put it up to chance. You win the Braves series, you put them 3 games back with 3 to play with a tiebreaker at that point, you're in. You're in. Make that the easy way in. And then you want to win your third game in Milwaukee and jerk around for the weekend. That's another story for later in the week. But 90 wins should do it. Same amount as the 2015 team that won the division and went to the World Series. So it will be an interesting week ahead and a lot to... I'm sure a lot to discuss at the newsletter, on X, in person, whatever. So, all right, let's take a quick break. We'll go to the second half of the show and wrap up here. The fans were a topic of conversation this week. The topic of conversation with the booth, topic of conversation with Howie Rose. Even Brandon Nimmo implored the fans to come out and support, and they did. What can we expect on Mets attendance? There's been criticisms of Mets attendance, especially in the Nats series in the middle of a pennant race. What can we expect? What historically does attendance look like? We'll talk about that and more as we wrap up right after this.